Good afternoon. Hope everybody had a good lunchtime, and we have a nice program for you through the 4 o'clock hour. Right now, the session we're doing is creating a better circle, materials innovation, and brands develop recycling loops. Brad Moncla from Eastman, he's the strategic marketing manager. He's going to tackle the subject. I mean, at times when sustainability is a bigger concern than it's ever been, consumers are looking to retailers and vendors to adopt environmentally friendly practices. Brad is here to talk about ways to approach that challenge. Brad, if you please.
Okay, thank you, Mike, and thank you to the International Housewares Association for actually still having this event. It's actually nice to see real people instead of staring at screens like we've all been doing for the last 2 years. And so I will be talking about sustainability, and just to give you a little bit of a picture for what I'll be covering here today, I'll start off with a case for action. So I'm going to make an assumption that since you're actually all sitting here that you care about sustainability, but if there's anyone who needs some convincing, I'll start off and try to give you a case for action. Then we'll talk about sustainability and not really provide a definition, but a way to think about sustainability and what should be included in sustainability. I think a lot of us toss that term around, but aren't always on the same page in terms of what that means. Then we'll share some consumer research that Eastman has done about the consumer expectations around sustainability. And then we shall finish up with the investments that we're making for that sustainable future. So that will be what we cover here this afternoon. So to start off with, there are, as we see it, three major crises that we need to address. And the first is to take care of 10 billion people. Now, we've all seen some great products out there over the last 3 days, right? Consumers still want great products, but 10 billion consumers is a lot of products. And how do we make those products? How do we make the great products that consumers want and need while still addressing the waste crisis and the climate crisis? That's the actual challenge, right? So if you look at any one of these, it's actually easy to manage. But when you combine them together, developing great products while still addressing waste and climate, that's actually the challenge. And so that's why we'll be, that's kind of our case for action, is that balancing act is the actual trick that this industry needs to address, and that, and why we're having this discussion here this afternoon. So plastics are essential. So there's a lot of discussion back and forth about plastics. So plastics can do some things that other materials like glass and wood and stainless steel can't do. And so if you think about caring for the world, right, over the last couple of years with COVID, we've seen quite a bit of need for sterile and safe medical equipment. Plastics are used in a tremendous amount of those medical products. We have to hydrate the world, right? So how are we going to keep everyone well hydrated? How do we keep them doing what they need to do, as well as feeding them, right? So how do you store your food, right? How do you prepare your food? Those are all things that plastics can help support. And when it comes to plastics, plastics do different things well. Certain plastics have different performance and properties, and that's why there are quite a few different plastics out there. Now, the challenge is there's a waste issue that must be solved. So you'll see in the next couple of slides, there's a lot of plastic out there, and not all of that plastic is recycled. Not all of that plastic finds a good end of life. And those are the challenges that we need to address. Before we go forward, I will hit at the very bottom here the three R's, because I think it's important that both as an industry and as individuals that we actually follow these. And so I'll first start with the first one, with reduce. I'll tell you a little bit of a story. So my wife just recently, she's a teacher, and she finally decided that she would bring her own lunch instead of the lunch at school. You know, it's a little bit of a way for her to be more healthy. So she's actually found a way. There's a Rubbermaid product that has different separate components She's got a Tupperware smidget, which allows her to put her salad dressing in there so she can keep the cheese and crackers separate from the fruit, separate from the salad. And she's found a way to do that with durable container and not have to throw away anything on a daily basis, right? So she's found a way to kind of reduce her footprint. And so she's only bringing food and bringing back the container she had, doesn't waste anything. And so that's an example of how to reduce and use plastics to do that, because the container she's bringing, these are all plastics which allow her to do that. The next R is reuse. And so I'll introduce you all to Schmoopsy here. And now Schmoopsy has been in our family for the last 14 years. So our middle child is now 17. When she was 3, she got Schmoopsy here. And Schmoopsy is no longer one of her favorites. And so the question is, what should we do with Schmoopsy? So should we recycle Schmoopsy? Should we reduce Schmoopsy here? Right, that's probably terrible if we reduce Schmoopsy. What should we do with Schmoopsy? Right, I think we can find another home for Schmoopsy. Right, so I think there's another family, another child that would love to have Schmoopsy. And so oftentimes we get into these discussions and one of the first things that comes up is, Brad, we should recycle all of these things. All of them? Right? We should reuse them as much as we can, especially toys, especially products that are still very usable, right? A lot of our products are sold into sports bottles. You might not like the color anymore. Does it still work? Can you replace the lid? Right? Do we have to recycle everything? Do we have to start from scratch again? That's where reuse comes in. Now, once we're finished with reduce and reuse, that's when we get to recycle. And so I just want to make sure whenever we talk about recycling materials that we first cover those two R's before we get to the recycling. And that's something both as individuals here and as an industry that we need to practice. I mentioned before that there's a lot of plastic out there. 300 million metric tons a year are produced globally. That's a lot. 40% of that is landfilled, 25% incinerated. Almost 20% leaks out into the environment, right? So, I mean, we've all seen those images of plastics floating in the ocean. At the very bottom, you see 16% is collected for recycling. And of the total amount of plastics used, 12% is actually mechanically recycled. And so, is that number sufficient? We don't think it is. And so, we're working for ways to make that number higher so that there are much better ends of life than what we see here. Now, why is mechanical recycling not enough? We're not going to go through a chemistry lesson here this afternoon, but there are 7 resin identification codes that you can find at the bottom of most plastic products. Right, number one is polyethylene terephthalate. Not going to get into the chemistry here, but think water bottles, right? Your fleece sweater. Some of this carpet could be polyester. Then there are other products like high-density polyethylene, which is used in milk jugs and shampoo bottles. You've got PVC, which is your, you know, pipes that are underneath your sink. A whole variety of plastics that are out there. And these plastics, as I mentioned before, are all good at doing certain things well. That's why we have so many of them. If they all did the same thing well, there'd only be one or two. Now, how many of those can be mechanically recycled? Well, pretty much only the bottles are mechanically recycled in a large way with PET, these bottles here. And your shampoo bottles, milk jugs, those types of things. Large, high-density polyethylene containers. The rest are really not. And a couple years ago, China stopped taking recycled plastics and letting them in the country. And lo and behold, many cities actually stopped taking plastics or dramatically cut back the recycling that they're doing. This is why, because there are not many good options for what to do with these plastics. And so Before I go further, I will talk a little bit about how consumers think about this. So over the last few years, we have done some extensive consumer research. We've done it across the globe in the US. We've done it in several countries in Europe, including Spain, Germany, France, and the UK. And we've done it in Asia, in China, and several other places. We've covered typically the ages that purchase products, so 18 to 60, men and women. And then lastly, we've covered a variety of markets, housewares, which we care about here, as well as small appliances, cosmetics, electronics, and building and construction. And so we think that consumer research is very helpful for us to understand, right, how do consumers actually think about sustainability? And so one of the things that we have found is that you need to think a little more holistically about sustainability. Sometimes, you know, we'll often hear, what's the carbon footprint? And we try to reduce sustainability to a number. Now that's helpful, right? But is that the whole story? So beginning of life. So when we think about beginning of life, so what are the materials that went into the production of this bottle, right? Are there renewable raw materials? Is there recycled content? Is it sustainable content, right? That's the beginning of life question. Then you have the end of life question. What do you do with Schmoopsie when, you know, you're at the end of Schmoopsie's life? Again, is it reuse or is it now time to recycle? So do you have products that are biodegradable, right? So especially if you have products that might easily find their way into the environment, you know, can we create biodegradability in those products so you don't have a long-lasting challenge, right? Are there take-back programs? Are there municipal recycling programs that allow us to bring that back? Right, so end of life is another important issue. Footprint, right? So this is that normal question of greenhouse gas footprint, carbon footprint, right? What's the energy? What's the water that's used to actually produce a product? Now, I'll show you one product here. This is it's a Tervis tumbler. It says Grad 2011. So we have had this Tervis tumbler since 2011. I wasn't even working at Eastman at the time. And my wife got a good deal on it. We actually didn't have anyone who graduated in 2011, but she got a good deal on it. We wash this Tervis tumbler 4 times a week and have done so since 2011. So this individual tumbler, we have dishwashed over 2,000 times. And so the distance between that beginning of life and end of life does matter. Now, if you ask me what's the carbon footprint of that Tervis tumbler, well, we can come up with a number. But if you use it once or 2,000 times, that's a big difference. That doesn't always show up in that carbon footprint. And so that durability matters, right? 2,000 times is a lot of times. That's a lot of single-use bottles that we never used because we kept that same Tervis tumbler for that period of time. And so, you know, we're trying to get you to think differently about sustainability and think more broadly. The last piece I'll cover here is about health and safety. So we can talk about carbon footprint, we can talk about beginning and end of life as much as we want, but do we still have safe products, right? And so chemicals of concern, BPA is one of those concerns, but making sure that we have safe products that meet the legislative and regulatory issues and that are safe for us to consume from, that's always an issue. The one that's recently come up, this is more of kind of a social transparency issue, has also come up and has been a big topic lately, and it's something we need to consider. So I mentioned we've done that consumer research, so we've actually color-coded those 5 quadrants that I mentioned in this last slide. And so let's take a look at what consumers in the US and Europe actually are concerned about when it comes to those 5 quadrants. So what's the top on the list? The top on the list there is ocean pollution. So I mean, again, we've all seen those pictures of plastic floating in the ocean, various animals consuming and finding that, and you know, those are terrible things to see. That's why it's number one. That's even higher than climate change, right? So climate change is a definite concern. We hear about it a lot. That ocean pollution is actually higher than climate change from a consumer concern and awareness perspective. What else is there? Chemicals and products. increasing waste. For those of you who, you know, there are lots of flat parts of the country, and whenever you see a large hill, you always wonder, okay, I think that could be a landfill, and often it is. There's some great ski resorts in Michigan that are landfills. And air quality, water quality are some other issues. Single-use plastics, that's one right there. I always, when I'm here, I have to grab these because I don't actually tend to use them that much, but I needed it for our show here. And lastly, child labor and overconsumption. And so when you think about sustainability, and especially as brands and retailers, we have to understand that consumers care about quite a few things. And it's important to know for the products that you're selling and for the consumers that you're targeting, which one of these do they actually care about? And so carbon footprint's important, but quite a few of these others can sometimes be more important. And so it's important to understand what your consumers are looking for and be able to share that with them. I'll next move on to some purchase drivers. So these are purchase drivers for sports bottles. And so, I mean, I think most of us have one of these sports bottles here. And, you know, our material has been used in those sports bottles for many, many years. What do people care about? So what are their primary drivers? Their primary drivers are things like no leaks, durability. Can I drop it and it'll bounce back? Right? Can I dishwash it as that Tervis tumbler hundreds, even thousands of times? Right? Does it impart odor and taste? Right? I don't want a plasticky taste, you know, when I'm drinking something. And then temperature control. We love our cold beverages. We love our hot beverages. Right? So stainless steel has become very popular lately because of that temperature control. So where does sustainability fit into this? Right? If you look at the secondary and tertiary drivers, you'll find sustainability towards the end of the secondary drivers. Now, we're talking here about sustainability, right? So obviously we believe sustainability is important, but when it comes to actual choosing of a product, when the consumer goes to purchase a product, went too fast there. You need to address these other issues. You need to still have a great product that's useful to the consumer before you can think about sustainability, right? So sustainability doesn't allow you to not develop good products. You really still have to have those good products out there. Sustainability can be helpful, but those primary drivers need to be met first. And those are the challenges, okay? It's easy to be sustainable, but it's harder to create great products and be sustainable. That's really where the trick is. The circular economy. So I think, you know, for those of you who have been here for many years, you have seen the linear economy in action for our entire lives, right? Where we take raw materials, we make sports bottles out of them, they're distributed, they're sold to consumers, and then once you get to the end of the life, right, they're trashed. We need to change that. We need to move to a circular economy where at the end of life, there's a connection to the beginning of life. And that's really the trick. Is how do you take those two and marry them together? Now, how many people believe that's easy? Do we have any hands for easy? No, that's not an easy task. And so that's why innovation and a substantial amount of innovation is actually required to build a more sustainable future. And so we'll talk a little bit about the things that Eastman has been investing in to be able to deliver that. And when I say Eastman, I also mean the industry as a whole. So there are a lot of other companies who are out there doing it. We're going to tell you about what Eastman is doing and some of the things that we're helping to drive. But many other companies are out there doing it, and we're hopeful they're all successful. So I mentioned mechanical recycling to you before. So mechanical recycling, again, here's this PET bottle, your single-use plastic water bottle. Mechanical recycling involves just chopping this up, remelting it with sometimes brand new plastic, and then, you know, making sometimes a fleece vest or a park bench or sometimes another water bottle. Now the challenge is it's hard to keep the performance the same, and so over time your performance degrades. And then when the performance is not good enough, you have products that end up in the landfill. Now what we are doing now is we call it molecular recycling, and it's where we take that same plastic and we, instead of just melting it, we actually break it down to its molecular level, and then we put it back into the processes that might make the plastic used here in this sports bottle, so you can get equal or better performance, right? The single-use bottle, has anyone ever put one of these in the dishwasher? If you do, it will not come out in this shape, right? It'll be a little shriveled mess. And so if you want that product to go through the dishwasher so you can use it hundreds and thousands of times, right, you need better performance. Mechanical recycling doesn't do that. Molecular recycling can. Now, I'll give a little story about what molecular recycling can do. So I know all of us have been walking around this, our feet are sore. Have you ever ended up in that booth that has the white carpet with the nice cushion underneath? And you're like, oh gosh, you know, my feet, this feels amazing under my feet. I'm just gonna stand here for a few minutes. The innovation showcase out there has a lot of that carpet. Feels great underneath your feet. I mean, just amazing. It's white. How many times do you think that carpet's gonna be used before you have to get rid of it? So I see a number up there, and it was once. Now, you know, we might do a good job and have clean feet around here. Maybe we can get 3, 4, 5 uses, maybe. But it's probably one. There's thousands of square yards of that carpet. Here. Where does it go? There's only one place it goes, right? It's going in the landfill. That's the only option. And so molecular recycling allows us to be able to take that product and turn it into new sports bottles again, right? So that is what molecular recycling can do. So we actually at Eastman practice 2 different technologies, and I'm not gonna really get into the specifics of these technologies, but one called carbon renewal allows us to take mixtures of wastes, right? So mixtures of plastics. And another we call polyester recycling. So polyester, again, is these kinds of single-use water bottles. We can take only polyester, so the chemistry has to be consistent, but we can turn them back into monomers and make things like sports bottles and blender jars and lots of other useful products. And so the magic here that I want everyone to look at is we're using waste plastics as the feedstock. So that, remember I said the trick is to take beginning of life and connecting it with end of life, right? So to take actual waste product that would often end up in landfills, and we're using that now as a feedstock. So instead of, you know, everyone knows that petroleum is getting more and more expensive for these days, right, we use less and less of that because we're actually using waste plastic as our feed source. Now, the trick is, how do you do that and make sure that your carbon footprint's actually lower? So we've actually been able to do that where our carbon footprint is lower than the original production of things like Triton. And the last thing I'll mention is that we are doing that right now. So this is not a, you know, we hope to do this at some point in the future. We actually are able to recycle up to 50 million pounds or 23 million kilograms of waste today. And so this right here is a sports bottle made of Triton Renew. We sold our first Triton Renew, it was May 2 years ago, to actually a company called Snips in Italy. They actually have a booth if you still want to go by and see it. And that was done almost 2 years ago. And so this is something that we're able to do. And again, we're not alone, so there are other companies out there, and we wish them the best. to get their molecular recycling processes up as well. And so if you think about that list I showed you before of all those plastics that are out there that can't be recycled, so our two technologies really allow us to cover now a huge portion of those plastics out there. Now, we're currently not operating at a scale that solves the whole problem, and I'm not going to say that we're going to solve, you know, all the waste problems out there just as one company alone. I'm not going to make that claim, but we are doing our best to take a big dent, put a big dent into waste plastic. And I mentioned those processes are already operating. 23,000 metric tons is what we can consume today. We actually announced not too long ago another process that's going in our Kingsport, Tennessee facility, which is about four times the size. That will be coming online basically a year from now. And then just a few weeks ago, we announced a plant in Europe. So, if anyone's from Europe, you know, it's helpful to have a North American plant, but you need a plant in each kind of major location because you have to consume the waste there. I mean, that's a necessary thing. So we just announced a European facility. It will be in France. It will come online in 2025, and it will be our largest and be able to consume 160,000 metric tons. So those are some of the things that we have already announced that we have invested in to continue this circular economy journey. And there could be more announcements after that because, again, this is a journey. This isn't the end. This is just part of what we've announced so far. And I'll take a sip of coffee here before I move on to the next step. One challenge that the industry has, that all institutions have, is trust. And so I think a lot of us realize that consumers, they don't trust the institutions the way they used to. One thing we found is that trust in brands is not what it used to be. And when it comes to sustainability, 45% of Americans need a third-party source, certification. How do I know that this is sustainable? And so we find it very important to actually work with a variety of other organizations, you know, who are establishing those standards, right? So that you can actually stand behind a claim and say, okay, hey, this has got 50% certified recycled content, and actually be able to document what's happening throughout the value chain. And so the company we keep, Ellen MacArthur Foundation, US Plastics Pack, you know, these are all organizations who are helping to drive that circular economy. One in particular that we have worked closely with is ISCC. They actually create standards. So if you think about it as like ISO 9000 for sustainability is maybe one way to think about it. So they actually help create standards around sustainability practices. We've been working very closely with ISCC over the last couple of years to make sure that our practices are in line with what they are developing. We are ISCC certified, and we actually demand that our molders are also ISCC certified. So if you're a brand and you purchase from a molder, you're only purchasing certified recycled content. So if you want to say that you're also certified, you have that option. But that's something we've found is necessary to create this transparency throughout the chain. And so that's something that we hope many others in the industry also follow. Because if we lose trust with consumers, it's hard to get back. It's a problem. And so we need to build that trust. We'll switch gears just a little bit and talk about benefits to brands. One thing, and this has changed tremendously, you know, over the last 10 years or so, is that consumers expect brands to reflect what is important to them. And so, you know, 10 years ago, you went to a burger joint because you liked their burgers, right? And that was the only reason you went to the burger joint. Maybe they have some good beer, I don't know. But that's why you went. Well, consumers have much bigger expectations now, right? So they expect brands to have those same values that they do. And so this is what consumers say about brands using recycled plastics in their products. So they say that brands who use recycled plastics are more committed to tackling waste. 78% of them say that. Those brands care more about the environment. Those consumers would be more loyal to those brands. 70% said they would be more loyal to brands using recycled content. They're considered more trustworthy, and consumers believe they care more about the environment. So that's just one example of how having sustainable products can help you better connect with your consumers. Now, that's a little bit of information about consumers. What about the retailers, right? So I know a lot of brands, you know, you're thinking at multiple levels of, right, who's my customer, right? So sometimes it's both the retailer and the consumer. And so what are some of the biggest retailers out there saying, right? Well, Williams-Sonoma is saying they're increasing recycled content, you know, beyond just wood and cotton into other materials like plastics. Amazon is incorporating up to 60% recycled plastic in their products. Bed Bath & Beyond is prioritizing sustainable materials in their own products, so private label products. That's one thing that you'll see a lot of is where retailers control their own products, where they have private label, that's where they're making a big influence and saying that they're prioritizing sustainable materials over others. These are things we just pluck from their websites. Right, so this is information that's very easy to see, and the retailers are driving that change as well. So it's important to think both at that consumer and retail level. So I've mentioned the molecular recycling that we are doing. Whenever we include recycle content in our products, we add Renew to the end of the product. That's pretty much what we do. So products like Triton, right? So I think a lot of you are familiar with Triton, which is the main material used in sports bottles. We call that product Triton Renew. And as well as all the other products that we make where they have recycle content, it's Renew. Now, a lot of brands have really gotten and partnered with us. Right, and we see this across the board for many different markets. You know, there's even luxury goods like LVMH. We'll see Estee Lauder for cosmetics and other products. There are several eyewear companies up here, Incipio and Zag for phone cases that have recycled content. And then a lot of the brands that you see here are the OXOs, Camelback, Nalgene, Snips, Elo. Those are all housewares brands. And so we're seeing great reception across the board for products that have certified recycled content. And so I'll give just a couple of examples. And so Tupperware, I mentioned durability as something being important. My wife and I still have a Tupperware set from when we got married. I think it's 26 years old now. So these products can last a long time. Tupperware is an iconic brand, and just recently they announced that they are partnering with Eastman in their Eco Plus line to have Triton Renew in a variety of bowls, pitchers, and drinkware. And so you should be seeing those available here in the next few weeks. So that's just a recent example of some of the products that have been launched with Triton Renew and our recycled content. Another one from a completely different industry is Stanley Black & Decker, and they just announced this a couple weeks ago, where they have their Reviva product line that's coming out here in early 2022, and it is based on Triton Renew with 50% certified recycled content, new colors, new design, and so this is power tools, right? And so, you know, certain products get very well connected to sustainability. Now, I was surprised when power tools was one of them, but hey, if we can, you know, if power tools can take sustainable products forward, I think the housewares industry can do that as well. So that's just a recent example, and you can see some of their information if you want to go and check out Black & Decker's website. you know, they've actually been able to use our material to do a full product launch and try to shift the consumer view of their brand. And so that's a great example of how sustainability can actually be used by a brand to reposition their brand. So a couple of key takeaways. You know, we're doing our best to advance the circular economy. No single solution will solve the full, you know, we're doing our best, okay? Not one single solution will be the answer. Mechanical recycling is out there, so I've said it can't do everything. Hey, if you can use mechanical recycling and that works for you, fantastic. We're just providing some other options beyond that, where molecular recycling can play an important role and be that complement to traditional recycling techniques. We are investing in innovations which connect that end of life to the beginning of life to help create and advance the circular economy. And we've been working with a lot of leading brands to do that. And so if you have interest in working with Eastman, we're willing to work with any and all. So would love to take any opportunities to talk about that. And these brands are really a catalyst because, you know, they can really help to convey to consumers the need for sustainability and how it fits into their lives. And so that pretty much covers my prepared remarks. And so would love to take any questions.
Are there any questions in the audience? That's good. I get to ask the first question. I want to actually go back before I ask anything about recycling and ask you a little bit about how in the future where we hopefully we have a more sustainable material chain. Right now for younger consumers, reuse is an issue. How does that, you know, kind of drive the process? In other words, you can't just rely on recycling. How important is reuse going to be as a complement to recycling in the future to have a more sustainable economy?
I think reuse is absolutely key. And I said it operates both at the individual level as well as the company level. I mean, you've actually seen retailers where they're taking back lightly used products, right? So lightly used clothing, backpacks, right? REI is an example of a company that's doing that. Whereas as a company, right, they're reselling products. And if you think about, you know, from a greenhouse gas footprint, to resell something that's already been produced, right, doesn't really take much additional energy, right? And so investing in ways to do that, I think, are great ways for the industry to help enable that. And so oftentimes, you know, manufacturers who like making new products, I'll just toss that out, where are there opportunities to, you know, allow you to reuse and keep using those existing products? So, you know, if you lose the lid to that bottle, right, can you sell another lid, right, so you don't have to buy a new bottle, right? So there are a lot of ways that, you know, brands and manufacturers can do things so that people can keep reusing their products.
And I want to follow it up with, I think you said that Renew is the label that you put on products that have undergone molecular recycling?
Correct.
How do you get the word out about molecular recycling? Because I do think that would be of interest to people. I do think that to a certain extent, it will kind of fortify, or it has the potential of fortifying people's commitment to recycling, to knowing that, you know, it's not going to go from being a plastic bottle to a bench, and then one thing later, it's just going to be in the dump anyway.
I mean, part of this discussion is to start to get that word out. But probably the biggest way that we get the word out is through the brands and retailers that we work with, right? Because, again, if you think about where trust is built, okay, I mean, we're a plastics company, right? A chemical company, right? I'm just gonna say, right, the, you know, people don't run to us to first when they're thinking about sustainability, right? So we work closely with the brands and the retailers to build that message and get that message out, because consumers trust and are much more connected to those brands than they are to companies like Eastman. And so that's really our strategy, is in the hands of the brands and the retailers.
Any other questions? Well, in that case, thank you very much for the presentation, and thank you for being here.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, and by the way, if you're interested, there'll be a very short recap of the presentation on homepagenews.com, but the IHA will be putting up audio versions of all of these seminars on their website. They should be up there shortly, so if you want to revisit anything. Also, we're kind of missing a person. As you're going out, if you weren't scanned, we'd appreciate if you take a moment to have your badge scanned, just so we have a record, and they try to track these things to figure out what we want to do next year. So I'd appreciate that. Thank you.